Welcome to the 14th episode of the It's Been Said podcast. I'm your host, SAI Executive Director Lisa Ramey. Each show is dedicated to conversations on leadership as we further SAI's mission to support, encourage, and develop Iowa's educational leaders. We're excited this month to highlight one of our promising practices from our 2023 conference and welcome Kristen Sousa, High School Principal at Prairie City Monroe, and Samantha Pohl, Instructional Coach. Well, welcome, Kristen and Sam. Could you introduce yourselves and share your role in the implementation of restorative justice practices at Prairie City Monroe High School?
My name is Kristen Sousa. I'm the high school principal here at PCM. And I guess I would just consider myself what you would call like a restorative justice circle keeper. I am initially the one that I think, you know, brought the idea to light at PCM, but there's been just a whole host of other people that have kind of taken it and run with it. And so Sam is one of those people.
And I am Samantha Pohl. I am the instructional coach at the high school. I also am a sponsor for some student organizations. And the minute Kristen talked about bringing it to PCM, I got very excited. And like she said, we just, our staff, RJ team just sort of ran with it and are loving it.
Fantastic. So could you guys provide for our listeners an understanding of what restorative justice is and what it looks like when implemented within a high school setting?
I'll kind of give a overview and then Sam, maybe you could fill in the blanks. So we really have restorative justice as a way to hold our students accountable for their behaviors, what they say, their actions. And so it's really important that people understand that it doesn't take the place of any form of discipline at our school. And so what we use it for is if there's a conflict or there's an event or there's something that happens where a student is no longer in what we would consider like the right relationship with themselves, with another person, with the school community, then we come together and try to kind of right the wrong. And so that involves a circle. It involves lots and lots of people in some prep work, but the goal is for them to hear how that relationship, whether it's with another person or with a teacher or whoever, how that has impacted others and how it's impacted the school community as a whole, rather than just punishing a student and just moving on. So it's a way for them to be accountable for their actions.
Yeah, and I'll add a little bit. So once we have a situation where somebody is not in a right relationship with themselves or with another person or whatever is going on, the restorative justice staff, we have meetings weekly and we figure out where we need to go from there. We always, it's called pre-conferencing. You always pre-conference with the person that we are holding the circle for. You don't ever want to just say you're having a circle, especially if they don't know what it is yet. And so we want to pre-conference with them, let them know what to expect and give them the opportunity to tell us some people that they feel are their biggest supporters and we can invite them and we have a big conversation and kind of address whatever the heart of the matter is.
Yeah. So what motivated you to transition to a restorative justice approach? And if there were any specific challenges that prompted this change?
Yeah. So I was actually telling somebody this morning kind of the aha moment that I had. And so what happened was several years ago. So initially we did not start out wanting to be on a restorative justice journey. It was more about having equitable and appropriate conversations with our students in the classroom if there was some sort of event. So it actually initially started during the Capitol riots. Kids were saying a lot of things, asking a lot of questions, and our teachers were, I don't think, were well prepared on how to handle some of those conversations and how to appropriately discuss them with students. And so I reached out to the University of Iowa and I said, hey, you know, I would really love some information if you guys have speakers or professional development. And they put me in touch with a couple of people, the Somia Palratty and Ian Lowe. They have the Palratty Lowe Learning Lab. And it was initially just about how do I teach my teachers how to have these conversations in class? And then we had an incident where some of our students were posting some kind of insensitive photos on Instagram. They weren't tagging the school or anything like that, but they were not appropriate. And I thought to myself, there's a couple ways that I can go about this. I can just get really, really mad and give them a lecture and do all the yelling and do all the things. Or I can sit them down and have an explanation and say, this is why this is inappropriate. This is who is affected by this. And this is why it's important for us to think about this ahead of time, you know, and have this conversation with them. That's the way I chose. And it was that aha moment for me where I was like, okay, I chose this path, this restorative path. I had this conversation. It went really well. They understood. They fixed their behavior. There were apologies made and they righted the wrong. And I thought, okay, this is super powerful for them to understand, you know, that their actions had impact and for them to kind of understand the impact that they have. And so as we started having these conversations about where do we want to go next with the equity training, it was sort of a natural progression. And so these same people that were doing those trainings, they had a lot of background in restorative justice. And that was sort of the beginning of our journey.
Yeah. Well, awesome. So you took a situation and decided, hey, we need to find a different response. So that's fantastic. Yeah. So how has this new response using restorative justice impacted your school's community and relationships among students, staff, teachers?
It's impacted us positively. I think, what did you say, Kristen? There was what's the percentage of office referrals? 54% less office referrals since we've started restorative justice. You can tell that students are ready to have conversations. Very rarely do they say no to a circle anymore. In fact, people are asking for them if they're going through something that's tough or that they feel like they just want to talk about. They like having a bunch of people support and hear what's going on. In a detention, it's not just sit down, put your head down and figure out what you did wrong. The teacher and the student have a conversation about, why do you think you're in here? How do you think that made me feel? How did that make you feel? Why did you do that? And teachers are starting to understand more of the why behind a lot of students' behavior, and relationships are just sort of blooming a little bit. I think if you ask our circle keepers, which I know you heard at SAI, but they will often say, I'm learning skills that will help me in my life because I'm learning that there's two sides to every story. I'm learning that it's important to be a good listener as much as it is to want to share what I need to share. Coping skills, support skills, all those kinds of things. So it's done a lot for our school culture.
And I will add, you know, restorative justice is more than just having circles. It's about just knowing how to have conversations with students. And so those office referrals, which are a credit to it's a credit to our teachers because before they immediately send a student to the office, they have been trained on what does a restorative conversation look like? How do we look for the why behind a behavior? How can we do this so that it doesn't get to the next step? So it doesn't always have to involve all these people coming together in a circle. They've also been trained in just having those one-on-one conversations with students. And that is a total credit to our teachers because they really have embraced it.
That's fantastic. My next question was going to be around those positive outcomes. And so you've already shared some of those, right? The improved relationships, the reduction in office referrals or discipline. Any other outcomes that you want to highlight?
Our students that are participating in circles, but even the students that are just one-on-one with teachers, conflict resolution is huge. They are taking the time to listen to other people's side of the story and how they are being impacted and just learning how to be active listeners with that conflict resolution has been huge. If they don't necessarily want a big full-blown circle, but they want to talk to a teacher, if they have an issue that they need to resolve, they understand how to advocate for themselves and how to advocate in a positive way so that confident that will carry long, long past, you know, what they're doing in this school. It's very, very interesting. And they also, you know, they know that they have specific people that they can go to, that they can count on always helping mediate if they need to have a conversation or things like that. So it's been really, really fun to watch.
Can you talk about how it addresses harm and or fosters healing?
Probably talking specifically about a conflict circle. That would be when a student has hurt the feelings of another student or has harmed them in some way. We have also had a circle between a teacher and a group of kids that were making class hard for, I mean, both parties had their say. And that one in particular, I wasn't a part of it, but I heard about it because we talked about it in our RJ staff meeting. But, you know, the teacher got to say his side of it and tell the kids, here's what I'm feeling when you act like that. And then the kids were able to say, here's why we're acting like that. Here's what we're feeling in those moments. And it turned into a really great discussion and was never a problem again. It feels like too good to be true almost, but it worked. And that class, I mean, of course there were moments because it's a high school, but they didn't have those issues again. And so that was really cool. And then just basic support conflict circles between students. We've had some that were two groups of girls that were kind of upset at each other, one-on-one that were upset at each other, that kind of thing. And it just led to a moment where this person was able to say, here's how I'm feeling and why, the other person the same. And they just got to have a conversation about it, where without the feeling that a circle gives, without that supportive environment, you have some teachers there that were probably chosen by those kids potentially because they feel support by them. It just allows for those healing conversations to happen.
And I will add, you know, especially when it's between teachers and students, I think students often forget that teachers have feelings and that they are people, right? And so these conversations that are happening between students and teachers, even if it's not in a circle, it's super important for the students to understand, not just respect, but understand that this is a person with feelings. This is a human being that I'm dealing with that's just trying to do a job, right? And so, and trying to help. And so that has been really, really good for some of our students and especially for some of our teachers.
Yeah, that's fantastic. When you can get people to talk, right? It usually has a positive outcome. That's for sure. So have you come up against some key myths or misconceptions surrounding restorative justice that you would want to clarify and or dispel those misconceptions?
And to be honest with you, I think Sam and I are both probably guilty of thinking some of these initially before we were trained. There's a lot of misconception that it's just sitting around in sort of like a kumbaya circle and everybody's singing and holding hands. And that's definitely not what it is. It's scripted. There's a lot of prep work that goes into it. We choose questions and quotes, and we choose things very carefully ahead of time based off of what type of circle it is, who's involved. There's no singing. Another one would be that it takes the place of like any sort of disciplinary action. It's really important for people to understand that it definitely does not. To be honest with you, our students, when we first asked them to be circle keepers, the group of 10 that we have, their initial reaction was, do we get to choose people's punishments? And we had to explain to them, no, there's still punishments. Like Sam said earlier, there's still detentions. There's still traditional discipline. I would say the number of detentions has obviously gone way, way down because we're not getting to the point of having to assign them. But if it comes to that point and there needs to be some sort of traditional discipline, that is paired with either a restorative conversation. We have students that maybe are suspended for a period of time that when they come back, we hold circles so that they understand, hey, we still care about you. We still want to see you succeed. This is how what you did impacted us. Now, what can we do to move forward from this? That, I think, is the biggest misconception, is that we have just completely done away with traditional discipline, and that's not the case. It's how do we hold them accountable for the harm that was done, and how do we move forward with the relationship after?
Sam, is there anything you wanted to add?
I think I'll just add, when it comes to the circle keepers, the student group, they, I think, got a little bit of heat for being chosen for that role. And thankfully, since that has, since the school has learned more about it and they know the process now, it's not a thing anymore. But I know they got a little bit of heat for being like the police of the school and, you know, things like that. So that was definitely a myth, because the circle keepers don't sit in on, you know, like she was talking about, if a student comes back from a suspension, there wouldn't be random students sitting in on that. Those are confidential. And so they don't get to just be in the know of all the things happening. They're only in specific ones. So
sure. Yeah. So you touched on this a little bit. So in what ways does restorative justice prioritize that accountability and healing over just that traditional punishment type approaches?
Yeah, I think, you know, like Sam said before, when we look at detentions, for example, we have a set of questions that our teachers are asking, and we ask our teachers to ask those questions when they're sitting with the students. Explain to me what happened in your words. Why do you feel like it happened? How do you think other people were affected? How do you think I, as the instructor, was affected? How are we going to move forward from this? And that's what that time is used for during detention, rather than sitting, having them put their head down or trying to police them, you know, being on their phones or whatever. And that has actually, you know, our detentions used to be 40 minutes. That's the way it was going to be. To now, a lot of our teachers are having these conversations and they feel satisfied with, you know, the conversation they had with the student, and the student's free to go after they're, you know, they've made amends. I definitely think, when in a circle or in those conversations, looking that person in the eye, and, you know, they've learned, they know one of those expectations is, if they end up coming down to me, if they've gotten in trouble, is you have to go back and you have to talk to them and you have to make amends and you have to say sorry. And I mean, that now is just, that's the way that it goes. They know that when they leave my office, if that's where they end up, that's what I'm going to tell them as they leave. You know what you need to do. You need to go have a conversation. You need to say you're sorry and mean it and have that conversation with them.
The thing that works really well is that people are anticipating having their turn to talk now. And it makes it like, even if you are the person that did the harm, it has almost like shifted that, I'm in trouble, I'm this again. They know that they're going to get the chance to say something, whether it's an apology, whether it's to tell their side. Maybe, you know, you didn't see this side of it, you only saw what I did. And it doesn't become a back and forth like that, but they at least got to express sort of their part in it. And I think that is like a huge piece to the puzzle of discipline and just being a person that values conversation and that values the other person in the situation. It just, I think that's been huge. And like she said, sitting in the circle, you know, we don't sit at a table. We sit in a circle, kind of vulnerable, because there's nothing that you get to hold on to, nothing that you get to fidget with. It's just you. And that does something for the authenticity of what people are saying and what they're willing to share.
Yeah, Sam, you mentioned values, right? And so my next question really kind of is around those. So how does the restorative justice approach align with the values and the culture there at PCM High School? And when you think about even, you know, you're a rural, more rural community. So how does this approach align with your values and culture there?
This, I think the one thing that Sam and I can both speak to, and Sam, correct me if I'm speaking out of turn. We've been here a long time, right? She and I both have been in this community a long time, working as teachers, instructional coaches, and, you know, administration. And the one thing that this community definitely values is family, right? Everyone knows each other. And so it's a little bit different in a rural community, because when a harm has been done, you're going to see this person over. And you're going to see them at Casey's, you're going to see them at Subway, you're going to see them at school. There's no getting around it. You know, one of the things that we definitely value here at the high school is this very much a sense of family and belonging. And I think that this aligns to that perfectly. You know, in most families, if something happens, you talk it out and you have a conversation and you try to right the wrong. And so that aligns with this. You're not going to get away from the people in this school. There's only 350 of you. Another thing too, that is super, super important that we've really been trying to implement is student voice. That is really important to us. It's something that we're trying to give as many opportunities for our kids to have a voice in how their education goes. And this fits. They have their chance to say their piece and their chance to speak up and say, you know, no, that this is my side. This is how I'm feeling. And so that definitely aligns with the values of our school.
Yeah, and I can add a little bit about values. The Circle Keepers, in their first round of 3-day training, created values for our group. Some of those values include compassion, confidentiality, respect, empathy, fun and joy, vulnerability, those kinds of words. They came up with those. And so I think that was a testament to me that students want those things in their lives, and they want them to be a part of their day here. And so whatever we can do to add those in any way to the community, to our school, to the classroom, whatever, we can do that. And so those are some of the things that we really focus on in RJ.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Boy, students, when we allow students to have voice, it's amazing, right? What they bring to the conversation. So as other districts are thinking about implementing this, what skills or strategies have you found to be most effective in teaching students and your staff about restorative justice and encouraging that engagement in the process?
I think having them participate in circles is the easiest way. I think that there's always a little bit of hesitation when it comes to a staff member being in a circle for the first time, but even if they're just an observer, they realize that, you know, it's really not that scary. We never have like a conflict circle or anything like that, that is being run by somebody that isn't trained. And we have a very specific set of adults in our building that are trained on how to run circles. And so just allowing our teachers to experience what it's like to be a participant in a circle has definitely eased their minds. Our students have really, really good relationships with our teachers. And so when we say, hey, you can invite a person that you feel really comfortable with, oftentimes that's a teacher. And so just allowing them to participate in circles as we've tried to roll it out has been really, really important. You know, I think they had a lot of misconceptions too. We've done videos for our students. We had, you know, like our student journalism team do a video on what RJ is. We've put out a lot of information. We've presented to the school board. All of those things have kind of helped encourage them to engage in the process.
Well, I heard one of you say earlier, if a student chooses. So do I, as a student, have a choice to engage in a RJ process or not?
Yeah, you would always have a choice. It's not ever anything that we want to force on anybody. I guess the one exception to that, we hold a lot of welcome circles. So a welcome circle is one, if you're a new student or a new staff member to our building, we'll hold a circle for you. And just, it's really about building relationships and kind of giving you faces that you'll recognize. And most of the time we just say, hey, we're going to hold a welcome circle for you. It's low stakes. It's usually always good conversation. So that's probably the one exception. I suppose they could say no, but they never have. I think they're usually pretty intrigued and happy to have something that welcomes them. But no, it's never, you have to do this, because that sort of defeats the whole purpose of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, fantastic. So how about challenges or lessons learned as you implemented RJ at the high school level that as others are listening and considering implementation, what lessons learned would you would like to share with them?
Some lessons learned. I think it would just be make sure to get the whole staff on board. It's important that they have a general understanding of it. You can't just say, we're going to have a circle fourth hour for this person. We're pulling these kids. It's important that all of the staff understand what happens at those and what's the purpose is of having a circle. They don't have to know the details of it, but, you know, not just calling a teacher at fourth hour saying, hey, I need these kids. That has created, you know, well, we're taking a test today. Or so it's just that kind of thing, like preparing the rest of the building for what it looks like, what it is, why it's important, that kind of thing.
And I would add to make sure that you have a really good core group that is invested in this. I 100%, we could not do this without our trained, there's like six teachers. Our counselor is one of them. Our at-risk person is one of them. But a core group of teachers that are really, really passionate about it, because they're the ones that are going to spread the word. And they're the ones, to be honest with you, that they do the heavy lifting. As an administrator, I'm busy. I have a lot of things going on. And so if you're looking to implement this, you need to have that group that's trained, can train other people, and is willing to do a lot of the heavy lifting. And I honestly could not do it without that group. I can't say enough about them. And they're the reason that it works. So that would be something that, you know, I think that would be a big lesson. I wouldn't want to do it without that core group.
Yeah. So as you think about what I'm hearing you say is you definitely want to have teachers on board. So how did you determine, you know, that core group? What steps did you take to get to where you have a core group?
Well, so it was kind of nice for us. This company that we work with, or this two individuals, Somi and Ian, they had worked with our staff, obviously, on the equity stuff. And so they had a pretty good idea of who we were as a staff. When I was looking at who do we involve, your counselor, obviously, at risk, if you have one, we also have a student advocate. And so she was involved. Sam is our instructional coach and a leader in our building, made sense. And so then it was, you know, let's look at our general ed teachers. Student input is important when looking at teachers that you would ask. You know, it's kind of hard to say this, but you kind of look at we looked at personality. Who are our teachers that our students tend to gravitate towards? It's probably easier to do in a small school than a larger school.
Had an interest form.
We sent too. Out an interest form. And then we had one teacher leave, and we looked at our current student circle keepers, and we said, hey, let's talk about which teacher do you think would be best to replace? And we gathered their input on who they felt would be a really, really good teacher to have trained. And they were right. I think they made the absolute right choice. So there again is student voice.
Anything, Sam, that you want to add to that?
I think it's important to like find out who would be interested and then maybe kind of go from there. So yeah, sending out that general form, and that goes for circle keepers too. That was part of the problem, was that first group was chosen because you have to start somewhere. But right. They got sort of like you were chosen because you're the favorite or whatever. And so now the seniors graduated last year, so we have three spots to fill. And so we had to come up with a process for that. And we decided to send out an interest form to freshmen. So we'll have people representing all grades on the circle keepers. Looked at the people that filled out that form, looked at their answers. We asked questions about our values that I told you about earlier, and just how they thought they fit with those values, kind of looked at their answers, picked three from that, and then sent out a form to their teachers to find out how they are in the classroom, things like that. And that's kind of how we picked the next set. And that's probably how we'll do it going forward from here.
And I just want to add just something really, really cool to that. We have a current she's a current senior, as an original RJ member. Her brother just got chosen as a freshman to be on it. He was, I mean, just he instantly knew that he wanted to fill out the form. He was interested in it because of everything that he had heard and seen from his sister. And so now we have a brother and a sister duo on the team. And I think that speaks to word of mouth and how positive our students are feeling about it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Could both of you recommend any resources, books, organizations for our listeners who might want to dive deeper into restorative justice and its application to school?
Well, I'm going to give a shout out to Somia and Ian. So Somia Palrati and Ian Lowe, they are out of Madison, Wisconsin. That does not stop them from coming to Iowa. They'll actually be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week to train some of our new circle keepers. So they make the drive. So it's the Palrati Lowe Learning Lab is, I just think I can't say enough about them. They're wonderful. And we have spent some time on the little book of restorative justice. I believe I mentioned our new book is The Four Pivots, right, Sam, that we've been reading.
Sean Jenright, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
I would add too, there are lots of examples of circles on YouTube. If people are just wondering even like what it looks like, it's hard to picture sometimes. So if you just Google restorative justice circles or restorative justice conflict circles, anything like that, there's lots on YouTube that you can see just to kind of get a feel for what it is like.
Fantastic. What haven't I asked you about that you just want to share with our listeners?
I really want to put a bucket. If people are looking to give their students a voice in their educational process, this is a really great way to do that. When we give our kids a chance to say something, I mean, the things that they say are just incredible. And their ideas that they have are amazing. And I just think that this is such an amazing way to give them that platform. And, you know, sometimes there are parts of their lives, you know, whether it's at home or at work, where they don't get a chance to say how they're feeling or what they want or how they want something to turn out in their lives. And this is their chance. And they're just, you know, and I think I'm biased because I just love our kids here so much, but just hearing the things that they have to say and their compassion for other people, it's been pretty amazing. And our leadership, our kids that are on our RJ team, the 10 of them, watching them grow as individuals has been incredible. And so if student voice is something that you value at your school, I think that this is a great way to incorporate student voice in how you kind of go about your business.
I think for me, something would be to trust the process. In the beginning, it's going to feel like kind of like, I don't know how to do this. Or maybe you'll have somebody that seems a little grouchy about it, but it really just trust the process and keep moving forward and always reach out if you have questions. Don't give up on it because it has done a world of difference and good for our school.
And it's not a quick process either.
Yeah.
I mean, we should add, it's been like a 2-year process for us.
Yeah.
So it is not a quick process and it's not a quick fix.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kristen, Sam. First off, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules. I know your lives are very, very busy. But most importantly, thank you for thinking differently on how you can support students and staff, right, with this process. So thank you so much.
Thank you
so much.
Be sure to join us for the next episode as we welcome Maria Lance from Ottumwa to learn more about how to propel social and emotional work forward in your school or district in a way that has a positive impact on both students and staff.